Blog Talk Radio.
Just listening to Brooklyn Baby by Mother's Favorite Child, who was created by my special guest on this evening on the leopard carpet, Mr. Paris Toon. He has not called in yet, so we'll just wait a few minutes, but I'm really excited about having Paris on the show tonight. Kind of a different twist. He's the producer. You know, and when I first heard this song, Brooklyn Baby, it was the first song that I received, the only song I had received. And I was like, okay, you know what? This is so hot. On top of the fact, my mom is from Brooklyn, you know. So, it, when I hear something that I can relate to, associate with, it was like, yeah, you know. But I just thought this track was hot. And I was like, okay, I need more. I need more music, you know, from Mother's Favorite Child and Paris Toon. And, you know, I was very, very blessed to have Paris send me, you know, the album. So, you know what? Looks like my feature has called in, so let me bring him in. Welcome to
Hello?
The leopard carpet, Paris Toon. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very good. I'm excited about having you on the leopard carpet with me.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this for the last few days. So
all right.
Let's get
all
it on.
All right. There you go. You know, I had to open up the show with Brooklyn Baby. And, you know, I felt like I was cheated, you know, because that was the only song I received, you know. And I was like, really? There's got to be more to, you know, Mother's Favorite Child and Paris Tune than just this. So I so appreciate the fact that, you know, you shared the music with me. And I'm excited, you know. It's funky. It's got such a groove to it. It's something that makes you move, but it also makes you feel. And I'm thrilled to have you on. I'm thrilled to be able to share just a little taste. You know, we can't give it all to them, you know, because we want them to go out and support it, but give them a little taste of Mother's Favorite Child. So why don't you tell us who you are, Paris Tune?
I'm Paris Tune. I was originally born in Brooklyn. Actually, I was born in Boston, but Mother's Favorite Child was born in Brooklyn. I moved to Brooklyn and started producing live soul music, and the birth of Mother's Favorite Child happened. I moved up to Arizona about 8 years ago and kind of retired from the music industry, opened up a marketing company, and then decided to get back into music about a year and a half ago. And I wanted to kind of give back to Brooklyn, and so I went in the studio and started writing Baptism by Fire, and the first single off that record is Brooklyn Baby. But Mother's Favorite Child has been around for a minute now, and I kind of, you know, stopped it for about 6 years, and you know, tried to come back with the Baptism by Fire featuring, you know, my band members, you know, backing the tracks for me. And the new Mother's Favorite Child album actually drops sometime in May or early June, and so I'm looking forward to that album coming out as well.
Okay, and what's the title of that album?
I actually don't have a title right now. I don't know if I'm gonna, you know, call it Mother's Favorite Child or come up with the title, but as of right now, there is no title for it. But there definitely will be, you know, within the next 30 days.
Okay, so then maybe you need to explain to us, you know, Mother's Favorite Child. What is that, a name of a group? Is it a representation? You know, maybe explain that a little bit more in depth.
Sure. Mother's Favorite Child is actually the name of the group. So originally it was going to be a collective back when I was in Brooklyn, and I had put together a lot of different musicians to record in the studio, and they really liked what we were working on, so we ended up actually creating a band. And so the name Mother's Favorite Child came up from a poem that I had written. It was either going to be Mother's Favorite Child or I was going to call the group Fat Bottom Lip. And I had a company that really wanted to market my music. And when I told them the options of the actual name, they thought that they could do some T-shirt sales with Mother's Favorite Child, which they were right. And so I just said, okay, that's fine. We'll call it Mother's Favorite Child. And that was the beginning, you know, of the band. And so now, you know, members have changed throughout the years, but I've tried to keep the music, you know, still, you know, to the core of inspiration and lyrics and groove.
Okay, so you started out with Mother's Favorite Child being birthed in Brooklyn. So I take it with musicians and artists out there to then now taking a break, moving out to Arizona. So are all the artists out in Arizona now that you're working with?
Some of the musicians originally from New York are in Arizona and in Mother's Favorite Child. Then we have a lot of new musicians. Some of the singers and musicians from the old Mother's Favorite Child will be guest appearing on some of the new Mother's Favorite Child album.
So
that's going to be kind of fun because I have a lot of tracks that I started and I didn't get to finish when I was in Brooklyn. And now we're finishing them up, you know, those songs with some of the old crew from Mother's Favorite Child.
Okay. Well, you know, in listening to it, Baptism by Fire, Paris, you know, I felt like, you know, as I stated earlier, you know, it's funky. There's such a groove to it that it makes you move. But at the same time, there's a story there, you know, in every song. And that it's not just about, you know, creating something that you just move to. It's something that you can definitely feel and potentially relate to. And is that the direction that you were going with the style of music that you're creating?
I am one of those artists or writers. If somebody tells me, you know, Christmas is coming, let's write a Christmas song, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I can only write in the moment. So if I'm, you know, if I'm writing a love ballad, then you know Paris is in love. If I'm writing You Did Me Dirty, you know that I'm hurt and I'm angry and I'm, you know, ranting. So when I started Baptism by Fire, I was actually going through a divorce. And so, you know, there was a lot of emotions, you know, spiritually, you know, financially and mentally. And that was kind of like I knew that I had to, you know, somewhat be reborn. And that was the reason that I actually started getting back into music, was because I didn't know what to do with myself, you know. And I and so I kind of reverted back to what was comfortable for me, which was writing.
Right. Okay.
And so, so that's pretty much how Baptism by Fire came about.
Okay. So I take it when you stepped away from doing the music, it must have just like kind of like something was missing out of your life in not doing the music, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I had opened a company and I had a family. I still have a family, but I mean, I had a family.
Right.
And, you know, the touring lifestyle and, you know, your own hype, it wasn't really conducive to, you know, being a productive, you know, dad or husband, at least the way that I was doing it. I wasn't doing it correctly.
Okay.
And so I opened up a business, and sometimes, you know, you start to make really good money. You know, you start to believe, okay, this is okay, this is filling my soul. And really, it wasn't. And so I was burnt out when I stopped doing my music. I was just tired of writing. I was kind of burnt out. And, you know, like I said, I had taken that time off. It was probably the best thing that could have happened to me. You know, there's definitely, you know, what's happening now with the buzz of the Paris Tune album and Mother's Favorite Child, you know, that was supposed to happen or was happening when I kind of walked away from it. So I feel kind of validated right now that people are still interested in what I have to say and what I have to produce. But there was definitely a void spiritually and artistically for me, you know, no longer doing music or writing.
Right. You know, I did a show the other night on, you know, kind of honoring the family members or loved ones of the artist, because I realized that, you know, when you step out into that creative world, you know, that there are sacrifices that the people in your immediate circle, you know, whether it's a significant other, whether it's a parent, you know, siblings, children, or whatever, there are sacrifices that are going to be made, whether it's, you know, financial and being able to, you know, purchase, you know, equipment or recording time, or if you're an author, publishing books, whatever, to then just that time that you as the creative soul steps into that studio and kind of zones out and you're in your world of creativity, you know, where does not include, you know, your loved ones. And so I sense from what you're saying that, you know, there was a challenge there in your life, you know, as a family man and as a creative soul, how to balance that.
Yeah, well, you know, my kids know when to ask daddy for something, because if they see me, you know, working on the computer, or they see me on the piano or guitar or whatever, they can ask daddy for whatever they want. Daddy's going to say, yeah, because I'm in a totally different place, you know.
Okay.
And so, you know, absolutely, as far as, you know, there was definitely some sacrifice that the children or that I made my family, you know, make while doing music, you know, years ago. When I, you know, got divorced, I learned that, you know, there has to be a balance. And, you know, I didn't have my children for a while I was going through the divorce. I'm a single parent now. And I wrote the song The Difference. And that was, you know, coming to the realization that, you know, all the Mercedes and the big houses and all the money and the attention, and it didn't really mean anything. What really meant something to me was my children. I couldn't hear their voices laughing in the house anymore. And the difference. And once that happened, everything else clicked correctly. You know, everything else kind of fell into place. The stars seemed to align, and I realized what was important. And the cars didn't matter. The homes didn't matter. It was about, you know, my children and my friends and my family. And, you know, music was just an expression of art. And, you know, and be able to make a living doing music, you know, that is just, you know, a great thing for me. But it was not and is not the most important thing. You know, without the children or a loved one or family members or friends or other artists, there's no inspiration. So there really wouldn't be any art. So it's really, you know, I learned to flip it. It's not about me. You know, if I have a gift to be able to write or produce, you know, I can thank God for that and thank my family for giving me the opportunity and the time to be able to do that. So I learned the difference. That kind of changed my life. And, I mean, we're talking about this in the last few years. So
okay.
So now I understand. No, it's not about how many songs I can write. It's about, you know, did the kids get to school on time? You know, did they get to karate or basketball? Okay, well, now I got to go write a song. And
okay.
that really truly did make a difference for me as a father
okay.
and as a human being.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm glad that you found your way, you know, because I think that is something that artists struggle with, you know, how to balance that all and make it work, you know, that, you know, it's not easy, you know, being that creative soul and being a family member or wanting to be in love and maintaining relationships and all of that. So, you know, I think that, you know, you've definitely gone on your journey just in a little bit, you know, that you've shared, you know, and figured out what's going to really work for you. So when you talk about Mother's Favorite Child or you talk about being Paris Tune, what is it, you know, that you want people to get out of what you're creating?
I just want them to know that, you know, what I'm doing is truly from the heart and it's real. So, you know, if you truly can feel the lyrics that I'm writing, you know, like I said, if you listen to a song like The Gift, and you know, you think, wow, that's a pretty love song. You know, I was truly in love at that moment, and you
okay.
know, I loved that moment. You know, if you listen to a song like, you know, You Need Jesus or Aya Ross, you know, I was in a dark place because, you know, dark spirits were around me, you know, doing dark things to me, and
okay.
It was real. But it was a way for
okay.
me to be able to vent. And what I hope that people can take from this album or anything that I write, that it's all just an experience. And, you know, when you're going through the dark, dark moments, you know, life is balanced. Eventually, something's going to turn around, and you'll get those light moments again. But if you live and feed off of those dark moments, they're going to last a little bit longer. And, you know, we're releasing Baptism by Fire with bonus, previously unreleased tracks as an import in Japan. And I felt so good to get those songs actually out of my vault, because I wanted closure. You know, I didn't want to
okay.
have any of that time in my studio anymore, you know. And so
okay.
it's actually, you know, closure for me now, moving on to Baptism by Fire, because I really don't want to write any more sad songs. You know, I want to write
okay.
Stevie Wonder happy, you know, dancing love songs. I really don't want to write any more, you know, sad, dark songs anymore, you
okay.
know.
Okay.
I hope that people can realize that whatever they're going through, eventually time will heal wounds, but you have to be the person that uses your energy to believe that it can actually happen, because dark place during that whole record, and I didn't think it was going to change.
Mm.
You know, luckily,
you know what?
I have, you know, friends and family, and it did.
Right. You know, that's a great story, and I appreciate your honesty around it. I think that a lot of artists produce out of, you know, their life experiences. You know, the one thing that I will say, though, and just my opinion, Paris, is that, you know, even if you're writing something sad, you know, or angry or whatever, something that you might deem to be negative, the beautiful thing that I've come to realize is that art allows us to feel. So sometimes we kind of need that experience from somebody like you that says, you know what, I feel this song. It's like he's written about my life, you know, and you know, somebody else out there, you know, understands where I'm at right at this moment. But I also get the, you know, I totally get what you're saying in regards to the fact that, you know, sometimes you got to let go of that, you know, and move forward and know that you're going to get through those hard times and there's sunshine on the other side. So I feel you on both sides, you know, of it. But I do think that, you know, when there's an experience of, you know, the sadness or whatever, at least for us, totally get it when it comes to you, but at least for us, you know, art can allow us to feel that emotion. When sometimes other places in our world say, you know what, you need to really get over it and kick rocks, you know?
Well, it's funny because my, you know, there's only 13, you know, there's really only 6 songs on Baptism by Fire. All the other ones are, you know, was poetry that I actually ended up, you know, having Morris sing and you know, to add more tracks to the album. As both tracks.
Okay.
But there was probably about 57 to 65 songs that I wrote in that time of Baptism by Fire. And
oh, okay.
The truth is, the band didn't want to hear any more. So they were like, you need to get over this girl. You need to let go. They're like, you're not the Paris that you used to be, that
okay.
swag and that energy and you know, comical happiness. And, you
okay.
know, and I try to explain to people, you know, this is really important for you know, anybody that admires songwriters or fans or even friends
yeah.
who, you know, of songwriters. Songwriters hold on to the pain longer than the average person. Because if I'm in a relationship and we break up or whatever it might be, while, you know, we're going through a little bit of pain, but that other person who may not be a songwriter is starting to move on. Whereas I'm writing it down. After writing it down, I'm now thinking about, okay, how do I make this a song? Now I'm going into the studio. I'm starting to record the song. I'm teaching other people the song. Now I'm mixing and I'm mastering the song. Now I'm getting interviewed about the song. Now the song's being played on the radio. Now we're performing the song live in concert and on tour. So I'm hearing that song for a year and living in that moment almost for a year while the person that I was with that I wrote the song about is already dating somebody new within 60 days. And so people don't realize, you know, that we hold on, songwriters hold on to that moment to be able to share or vent about that moment, especially if they're a recording artist and a touring, you know, recording artist. And so a lot of times people don't realize that Baptism by Fire, you know, took me, you know, maybe 6 months to write, but it took me a year and a half to get over. And and so when people, you know, say, wow, you know, that was some really sad stuff or some beautiful stuff, they have no idea how long, you know, I tortured myself in order to actually release, you know, those types of songs.
Interesting. Interesting point. Interesting. I'm getting it, Paris. I really am getting it. You know, interesting point that here it is when you create something like that and then, like you said, going through the process of recording it and mastering it to then, you know, being interviewed and people talking about it to then performing it, it keeps it alive.
Yeah, it truly does. And now, luckily, you know, when somebody asks me and says, you know, what's the deal with, you know, a song like Aya Ross or Sweet Tooth for Chocolate, I don't feel the same way because it's gone now. It's past me, you know.
Okay.
My dad is sick with cancer right now, and he's the reason for the song Pop's Barbershop. And so now when I hear that song, you know, because he's sick, I actually, you know, get emotional when we're playing that song because it just brings me back to, you know, my integrity as a man, you know, the character that he had that he instilled in me. So there's different songs that do different things, you know. And and the new stuff that I'm writing, I can't wait for it to come out because it's me coming out of that darkness and going back to that inspirational light to where I'm writing, you know, swagger songs like Brooklyn Baby and love songs like The Gift, you know. So so we hold on to a little bit longer than the average person for sure.
Okay. Well, you know what, I want to jump into another track so that everybody that's tuning in right now can get a little taste of Paris Tune and Mother's Favorite Child. And I was like, you know, okay, which track do I even go to? And as I sit here and I listen to your stories and I'm like, which one would he want me to play, right? I'm like, okay, because, you know, I wanted to play, you know, Pop's Barbershop because I really love that. And I'm like, okay, maybe not go that direction. So should we just jump in to play The Gift?
Sure, you can play The Gift. That seems to be the song that, you know, a lot of the lovers are requesting on radio. So sure, we can play The Gift.
Okay, so we're going to go into that sweet direction and play The Gift by Paris Tune and Mother's Favorite Child.
Express how much this love is taking me. this was meant to be, just for you and just for me. Now we can feed on this energy, sweet insanity. We could be
as strong as the sun when you and I become one.
This is more than just a
physical love.
Child. Can I just tell you, the vocals are absolutely amazing along with the musicianship.
Thank you.
It's just beautiful.
Well, just so everybody knows, I'm a producer and a songwriter. The vocalist on this album and on Mother Spirit Child's album is Morris, who co-writes melodies with me. Because a lot of times people think that I'm actually the lead singer of Mother's Favorite Child, and I've never
the lead singer. Right, and I did think that in the beginning until Hassan, you know, corrected me on that. But I thought, you know, whoever that is that's singing, you know, it's like, man. But it's beautiful, and it's all live musicians, right?
Yeah, I grew up programming hip-hop, and you know, I switched over to live instruments. So the Baptism by Fire album has no programming at all. It's all live musicianship, and, you know, it's everything is live. And so that's kind of the Mother Spirit Child signature, is that we do everything live. You know, I was brought up on Prince and Stevie Wonder, and, you know, growing up, it's all live instrumentation. And so I just wanted to keep it that way, to keep it a little bit more organic, you know. And and so that's what I think, you know, helps us in our sound and our brand, is the fact that we're actually creating, you know, music with all live instruments.
So when you define the music as being honest, raw, and timeless, what does that mean to you?
What that means to me is, you know, if you could write a song, like, you know, if you can write a song, you know, 10 years ago and not put it out, and then release the song, you know, and it still does well and people like it, and then 15, 20 years from now, it's still doing well. Like, that song, The Gift, was actually, I started that song in 2005. And then I finished it and released it in 2011. So to me, you know, the accolades that we're getting off of that particular song, to me, you know, it shows that, okay, you know, you write a good song. You know, if somebody covers your song, that to me, you know, can also be a an example of a timeless, you know, song. Usually if you start, the core of your inspiration comes from truth. Usually it's pretty timeless. You know, it's not fabricated. It's not... you're not writing music for the moment. You're writing it, you know, for yourself and for others to eventually appreciate it. That, to me, is what timeless music, lyrics, and songs are, to me anyway.
No, I feel you on that, and I agree. And I do think that, you know, just in my experiencing, you know, your music, you know, from just a little past week or so. You know, I see it that way. I see that, you know, I could pull this out and play it. You know, I'm going to be old school, Paris. I'm going to still have a CD player. Okay, I would just want you to know I've never jumped up to the, what is it called? You know, the little
LED
player thing that you, iPod.
Yeah.
I'm old school. I like that hard copy stuff. I don't know why that, you know.
I hear you. I mean, I feel you for sure. So, you know, I mean, the first line actually in The Gift is, share with me your beginning, extended like a rare Prince B-side. A lot of folks don't even know what a B-side means. You know what I mean? But Prince fans, you know, we know what a B-side means. And so I totally understand about, you know, being old school and wanting that, you know, music that, you know, lasts forever and not just for the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I just see, you know, myself being able to pull this out and, you know, in my rocking chair on my porch and say, I remember I had this boy on my show, you know.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. That means a lot.
No, I think it's great, you know, and I think it's special because of the live, you know, musicianship on top of the amazing, you know, vocalists that you're working with and the amazing writing. You know, and again, I think it's something that we can relate to. You know, I do agree with you that, you know, when, you know, your music is something that can touch people, you know, that we can feel that's still relevant in somebody's life, you know, in 10 years or whatever, that's when, you know, it really, you know, can continue to live on, you know, always. And, you know, I think that's just amazing because so much of the music, you know, that I even receive here at Flavor News Radio, you know, it's that, you know, I'm so not technically there, Paris, you know, but my term would be electronically created.
Mm-hmm. Programmed music, sequence programmed, yeah.
You know, yeah, you know, and I mean, it's all good, especially if you are a producer engineer that can put it all together and make it work. You know, but there's nothing like, you know, that the hearing the actual instruments and musicians playing it. So I, you know, one day I hope to be able to be a witness in person, you know, to you know, who you are and, you know, your members of your band and all of that, because I bet that's just an absolutely amazing experience to see a live stage performance.
Oh yeah, you're gonna make sure, we'll make sure that, you know, that happens. You know, we'll make sure that, you know, when we're in Seattle or wherever it is that we're touring, if you're there, we'll make sure that, you know, that experience happens for you and any of your fans that, you know, want to come check that out. Because, you know, like I said, my influence was Prince and Rakim. Lyrically, you know, Rakim, musically it was Prince. And, you know, to see a Prince show, it's like, you know, you realize, oh, okay, I've serious work here to do, because, you know, what everybody else is doing is not even close. And so our live show is actually better than the record. And that's by design, and that's just by having the time to flesh things out, you know, as well, making things a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got a lot of feedback from the industry saying, you know, Paris, people are waiting for you to come up with a new record, but you can't do it all live. You program some stuff and you know, that's why I kind of wrote Pop's Barbershop, because I was kind of like, no, you know, I got to go from, you know, where I am and what matters to me. You know, my dad had, you know, Sade and Luther Vandross growing up. When I was growing up, they were going out to check out. And I'm like, I'm getting older. Who am I going to be able to go see? I mean, you know, as much as I love Rakim, I can't take my date out to go see Rakim and have it be romantic. You know what I mean? And the answer to come out with a record for every 12 years, so it's kind of like, you know, I'm like, what am I waiting for? So I just decided,
funny.
You know what, I'm going to write a record that if it wasn't mine, I would actually go check it out. And that's kind of what I try to do with Mother's Favorite Child.
Okay, that makes sense. It really makes sense. So really, you got some flack for doing having the musicians?
Not from the musicians, from the recording industry.
No,
instance,
but I'm just saying, no, for having musicians that perform the music versus the produced music.
Yes, because, you have to understand, I have to be able to play something in the hands for radio and for marketing and advertising, whatever it is, that's going to be able to fit, you know, fit in the rotation. So, for instance, if, You know, if you have programmed music happening and people are so used to programmed music and they're not really used to hearing, you know, jazz chords or lots of thick background harmonies anymore or a solo in a song, they get nervous, you know. Radio stations, management, booking, everybody gets a little bit nervous. And luckily I have a team that, you know, believed in me and trusted me to say, hey, he's going to do what he's going to do, give him full artistic freedom and just go ahead and do it. And whatever happens, happens. You know, so for me, it was kind of like being an independent artist and having a little bit of national recognition. I was able to have a little bit more control than, say, a lot of the other artists out there. Plus, I own my own studio. So having like a real, you know, 3,000 square foot studio with live instruments only in it, that's kind of my thing. So I couldn't do the program.
So when it comes to Mother's Favorite Child getting out there and performing, is it taking place like in Arizona? Are you booking tours places? Like, what is that looking like for you, or what is the goal for it?
We're going to be doing festivals and tours. Like, you know, I'm not really trying to bring Mother's Favorite Child out to the East Coast or, you know, where we're from until our show is perfect and until the new record is almost about to drop. So, plus it's cold. I'm not trying to go back east in the cold. But we are definitely going to be doing New York, Boston, Pennsylvania, California, Vegas, Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So we'll be hitting all the big major, you know, jazz soul, neo soul markets, and be on a tour. And eventually, we hope to be touring with one of the, you know, larger national acts as a supporting, you know, band.
Okay. Now, is there any hopes of that? Is there anybody out there major that's paying attention?
Yeah, we've actually got a few phone calls from various artists, you know, that want to play with Mother's Favorite Child, to have Mother's Favorite Child do some shows with them, especially out in the Southwest, because when they come out here, they don't really have a lot of the, you know, original bands that are doing something, you know, nationally to bring an audience. So there are definitely, like, you know, we're doing remixes for artists. I'm doing a remix right now that features Esperanza Spalding. I'm pretty excited about that. That comes out in March. And so we're getting, you know, we are definitely getting some recognition from this Baptism by Fire album. And as far as the tours, you know, we're doing our shows. And we are going to be hitting, I believe we're going to be in New York in May. So we'll be in New York in May, and then we'll hit Boston, Pennsylvania, New Jersey. And then we'll be in Atlanta for sure in the summertime. And then we'll be doing the West Coast, you know, spot dates, because we're right in Arizona.
Okay. So you know, I want to ask, what was that? I want to ask this, and you can definitely say, you know what, Flav, I'm not going to answer you. You know, hey, you're on the leopard carpet. I can at least try to ask. You know, how do you have sponsors, or how is it that you financially are able to put this all together and make it work?
Luckily, you know, I ran a marketing company that was financially successful, you know, marketing. So I financed a lot of Baptism by Fire myself. Sponsorship then got involved. Musicians loved the music so much that they went from being work for hires to just wanting to be a part of the project. A lot of times when people really believe, if you can sell what it is that you're doing as authentic and organic, and that you're going to, you know, have some serious work ethic, people who you think you couldn't afford will actually play, you know, for free. And so, you know, luckily I have, you know, I call him Santa Claus, Kent Phillips, who actually owns Carefree Studios, who basically built the studio for me based on what I needed to make records, because he loved my music so much. I'm very, very lucky. But I think part of that spiritually has to do with the fact that I did not sell out. I kept my integrity, my character, and the love of what it was that I was doing. And so I really couldn't lose, you know, because you can't – you're always successful if you're doing what it is that you want to do. There is no failure because you're doing what you want to do. So there really is no failure. No matter how quick you grow or how slow, there's always going to be growth because you're not doing something else. And so sponsorship definitely starts to build up. And and quite honestly, you know, fans – paying to see us play and buying CDs and getting downloads, you know, independent artists, you know, we can make a little bit of money and, you know, support ourselves. So that's been a blessing.
So what do you think the success for you guys is? Is it because, like what you talked about earlier, it being, you know, just, you know, truthful, honest, you know, classic, timeless music that is getting the support? I mean, I could tell you up here in Seattle where I am, right? It's, man, everybody wants something for free, Paris. It's like, man, can I get on your list to get into the show? Or, man, can I get a CD for free? You know, it's all about, like, and it's like, and that's one of my things that I'm just on such a mission about. It's like, you know what? If you can jump up and pay $75 to be in the rafters when Prince came to Tacoma, Washington, you know, you can get up off of $10 to go to a show or pay for a CD. Especially if you say that you're really digging what this artist is doing, then support them. And so I find that as being a challenge. But is that a challenge for you in any way, or you're just lucky?
It was somewhat of a challenge in the beginning, but I think me getting from, you know, getting out of the behind the scenes and somehow being forced to become an artist and not that quiet guy that just writes the songs and tries to be mystical and doesn't want to talk to people. Once I found out, you know what, these songs are real that I'm writing, they're going to know who I am just based on what I'm saying. So I might as well be honest with the people that actually respect and want to hear my music. Once you tell a fan that they're not a fan, they've actually become a friend because they're helping to support what it is that you do, you get more support. So I think part of it is, like, especially with music, it is very difficult to sell music because you can get music for free. And, you know, people's attention span is gone within a week on music. So what I do is a lot of times I give my music away and I say, hey, come in. You're going to get the CD for free. Come into a show. I'll give you CDs for free. Buy a T-shirt. Go online and download two of the songs off the album from iTunes. I don't beg for this. I don't ask for this. But as I'm in conversations with people, those are things they say when they say, oh, you know, if I go to give them an album, they go, oh, I have one. I should give it to a friend. Because by giving an album to somebody, that may mean that they'll bring more people out to the shows, which means that the club owners will pay us more because we're bringing a bigger draw, because now people want to see us. So I think it has to do with hustle, you know, hard work, and just trying to be creative, or as creative on the business side as you are on the artistic side, and understand that this is a business. It's not just about making art. You know, there's a lot of painters out there that can, you know, paint, but there's only a few artists. And so I want to be an artist, and that's what I feel that I truly am. And so I have to do the business just as serious as the art, so that I can balance the two of them. And, you know, I got a lot of heads to feed. Like a management, like, I mean, I got the people to feed, so I have to be financially successful.
I got you. You know, I think that there are a lot of artists, though, you know, which I'm sure you've run into this, you know, over the many years that you've been in this industry. There are a lot of artists that think just because they have a talent, they're going to be successful. You know, everybody's telling them that they're great, you know, amazing, you know, whatever it is, you know, but then they just have no understanding of
themselves. The sad thing is there's so many artists that are incredible artists that should have made it, that should be selling millions of records, that should be financially successful, but they sell themselves short by believing that their artistry is enough. And sadly, it isn't. You know, it isn't. It isn't in sports. It isn't in, you know, the entertainment industry. So once you realize that, it just becomes a matter of how bad do you really want it? You know, are you willing to lose the weight to be on stage so that you can take better photos and then get sponsorship to be put in magazines? If you're not willing to do that, then you don't really, really want it. There are certain things that we have to do as a business, forget the art side, but as a business in order to be financially successful. And if you can't understand that and you're not willing to work towards that, then you can be that starving artist in Seattle playing in the rain, you know, for a few dollars. You know, you can be that artist. You can be that artist in Arizona in the heat, you know, when the people throw some dollars in your bin or whatever it is. You know, that I don't want to be that starving artist. I have there's no reason that artists should have to starve if they just put some energy into the business.
You know, I appreciate you saying that. I think it's a message that, you know, the listeners of Flavor News Radio, and especially artists, need to really, really hear. you know, and I think it's something that, in a sense, has to be drilled in their head. Because, you know, there's, I mean, even like when I had Tasha Taylor on the show, you know, a few weeks back, you know, she talked about the fact, you know, her father, Johnny Taylor, you know, taught her it's like 90% business and 10% creativity, you know, and it's like really, really understanding, you know, all aspects of it. Even if you have the capability of hiring somebody to do certain parts of the business, then you need to understand that still, you know, yourself. And I was interested in the fact that you talked about, like, in a sense, turning a fan into a friend. And so right there, it makes me feel like it, you know, it's like bringing them in and making them feel they're a part of this whole process, you know, versus somebody who's an outsider. Am I interpreting that correctly, Paris?
Yes. And that is new to me, just so you know. I have not been the kind. I'm great one-on-one. In a crowd, I'm not so good. But I've been, you know, trying to get better. It's very uncomfortable to walk into a place and have the majority of the people know who you are, and you don't know anybody's names, and they know so much about you based on your lyrics and interviews, and I don't know anything about the person that's talking to me. And that sometimes can be a little bit uncomfortable. But once you realize that what you're doing inspires them possibly just as much as the people that inspired you to even write, you know, did. Mm-hmm. So once you realize that, you just kind of have to say, you know, thank God and thank you for, you know, admiring my work. And I'm you know, that is the stuff that keeps now motivated. You know, it's not so much the experience. It's making sure you get the experience out for others to experience, because maybe they write the next Brooklyn Baby and say, I wrote this song because I was inspired one day by Paris Tune, and, you know, I got into Neil Omar, and I'm hoping this year we work together. You know,
so those are
the things that make it all worth it. And you can't pull the Prince thing. You know, the 80s and the 90s is over. It's Twitter and Facebook and social media, and you can't fake it. You know, because if I fake it, and I become some best friend on Twitter or on Facebook, and they come to me and I'm stank, they're going to be like, he's not real. And so how can I be talking about real musicianship, real lyrics, and not be real to another human being? So that's kind of where I'm coming at. I have no reason to fake it. You know, I'm past that. Egos are gone. Insecurities are gone. You either like what I do or you don't. If you like it, thank you very much. I want to know about you too.
Okay. Well, you know, I think that is something that is something to be considered. You know, if you can find a way of engaging, you know, the people that are paying attention, you're right. I mean, even if you were to give them a CD, you know, best believe if they were loving what you're doing and they feel connected to you, even if they're not really personally connected, but they feel they're connected, then they're going to go out there and tell somebody else about you. They're going to get somebody else to buy a copy of the CD, or get them to come to a show, or get them to go to the website and buy a T-shirt, you know, or whatever. Because I really believe in this game. You know, when somebody loves what you're doing, word of mouth is a very powerful tool. And I always encourage those that say, hey, you know what? I love what he's doing. Okay, then you know what? Tell your network. Tell other people that you love, you know, what they're doing. You know, because that's how it's going to, you know, help push them out there. You know, I remind people all the time, Paris, the fact that these mainstream artists out there, once upon a time they were a nobody, but people got behind them to push them out there so that somebody then started paying attention, you know.
Right.
So if there is somebody in your world, whether it's, you know, cyber world, whether it's, you know, in person, whatever, you know, we are very powerful as individuals in being able to be instrumental in the success of your career.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because my mentor, my spiritual mentor, and, you know, someone who's like a father figure to me, is George Benson.
Mm.
And I met George Benson, you know, when I was going through my divorce. People kept saying, hey, we got to introduce you to George, because he lives in Arizona. And I was like, I don't want to meet George. I don't want to meet anybody. You know what I mean? Because I'm not starstruck at all. And when I met George, we became friends. You know, now he's family. Like, we're like family to one another. You know what I mean? Like, he is truly a mentor. You know, he came in the studio and was part of the recording process while we were recording. You know, Aris, my lead singer, you know, one of his idols was George Benson. And I didn't tell him that I knew George. I didn't tell him George was coming up to the studio. And so for Morris, the song Pop's Barbershop, because he knows my dad as well, too, means, you know, a lot to him, because on that day, George came up and surprised us at the studio, and Morris had to sing in front of one of his idols, and was just like, I cannot believe that Paris got George Benson in here. And what ends up happening is now, George and Morris are friends. You know,
beautiful.
And I, you know, I don't ever ask anybody for autographs. And when people ask me for an autograph or act like that, I tell them straight out, listen, shake my hand. My name is Paris. What's your name? If you want my autograph to give to somebody that hasn't met me, that's fine. But you just met me. That's worth more than a signature. And I'm saying your name.
Right.
We're getting to know one another. And
right.
when you treat people as your equal, and you can tell people, listen, treat me as equals because, you know, that's what we're about. That's when they become a true fan. You know, that to me is what a true fan is. It's kind of like, I might not like all of his songs, but I like him as a person, and I want to support him. I like three of his songs, and I'm going to make sure that we, you know, we support him. And so that's what I kind of tell everybody, you know, let's it's too hard to try to, you know, sell millions of records without millions of dollars backing you. So we have to do it, you know, by being honest with one another.
Right. Well, Paris, would you be okay if I played Pop's Barbershop?
Sure.
All right. Well, I'm going to play a very special tune that Paris created, Pop's Barbershop.
Yeah. Shine.
All right. We were just listening to Pop's Barbershop, again, by Paris Toon, created by Paris Toon, and sung and performed by Mother's Favorite Child. I'm loving this, Paris. I appreciate your honesty, you know, in what you think and you feel. And, you know, I think that honestly speaks volumes, you know, for you, you know, to be able to share of yourself and willingness to share of yourself in this way. When it made me smile when I saw this particular track, because I have an artist that I'm going to be bringing to Seattle on tour in March, Monica Monet, and a gentleman she's working with out of Jacksonville, Florida, where she is, owns some barbershops. And I told her, I said, you know what, Monica, you need to go into those barbershops and start singing to the men while they're getting their hair cut, you know. And I, you know, and like there are people who say, you know what, you know, go to those beauty shop owners and barbershop owners and see if they'll let you, you know, sell your music, you know, in their shops. What do you think of that, like down home grassroots approach, you know, to getting your sound out there?
It's funny because, you know, my dad owned one of the biggest hair salons in Boston for 35 years. So I was,
okay.
You know, I was the son. You know, pop at the barbershop, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And so everybody was trying to push their hip-hop and rap tapes, and, you know, back then it was cassettes. And it, that was the original, you know, networking, you know, the barbershops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people go there and try to sell their tapes out of their trunks. And, you know, I'm all about, as long as you don't step on anyone's toes, and as long as you have some form of, you know, etiquette on how you do things, I don't want you to go in there booster. But if you have some tracks and they're hot tracks, you know, people from, you know, locals will support you because they want to be a part of your success. So I say if you can sell your CD or get people to go to iTunes by giving them download cards or whatever it is, you know, go for it. You know, all you're doing is you're building, you know, friendships and relationships with people. And as like I said, as long as you're not stepping on anybody's toes. Because, you know, barbershops can't become record stores, but they can certainly be networking tools. And so I say go for it, you know. I met so many people through my dad's barbershop that, you know, I mean, I met Prince because of my dad. You know what I mean? I met so many different, you know, musicians and artists and just business people. It was, you know, one of the greatest experiences of my life was able to grow up in a barbershop, you know. So I say go for it.
Yeah, that's cool. So let's talk about the fact that you won the 2011 Phoenix Artist of the Year Award.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did that all come about, and how does that feel?
Well, I mean, I'm appreciative. I mean, you know, when you're nominated for an award, of course you want to win. Anybody that says, oh, I don't care, you know, if I had a Grammy, maybe I wouldn't care about the Phoenix Awards. I don't know. But for me, it was validation because I had stopped marketing, and I was just doing music full blown out. And everybody told me, "Are you crazy walking away from all that money? You're going to do music? What is wrong with you?" They thought I was having a nervous breakdown. And being in Arizona, nobody really knew my background because I left it in New York. And so when I got that award or got nominated, it felt good because I got nominated off of Baptism by Fire, which wasn't even physically released yet. It was a digital album. And somebody had heard it and said, this right here is the best thing that I've heard out of Arizona, but nationally in a long time, it's different. And so that right there, when I had judges, you know, who voted and said that this is the record that, you know, to the artist we want to feature as artists, plus being able to validate some of the new musicians that I was working with, what we were doing and saying, hey, you know, this is the real stuff here. That's kind of what made it, you know, that's what made it, you know, feel good to me, and to have my children with me and let them on the red carpet with the award instead of me, that was fun because they had a blast. The validation of awards, I don't really care much about, but that particular one, being my first one coming back and being the Artist of the Year in Arizona, you know, for R&B Soul, it meant a lot. It really did. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that it did, but it did. But now I'm done with it. Like, you know what I mean? Because I don't want that rejection. I don't want to be up for any more awards and, you know, not get one. And I think we're up for some LA awards, too. But I just, you know, it is what it is, you know. But I definitely it helped me anyway, you know, share with my family and the musicians.
Sure, sure. So out of curiosity, how old are your children at this time? At this point?
Oh, that's right. They asked me if I would give them a shout out. My daughter Jordan is 13. My son Demetrius will be 12 on Sunday.
Okay.
My daughter Violet is 8, and my daughter Lyric is 7. And
okay. Yeah,
I have 4 children, and I am a parent, so I know a lot of people kind of like
okay. That.
But yeah.
Well, obviously you figured out how to balance it all out. So what do the kids think about Dad doing this?
All they keep saying is, you know, when do we get to be on TV? Like, when do we get to walk down the red carpet on TV?
Okay.
I don't think, I mean, they know the songs, like, they'll be singing the songs and things, and I think that's cute.
Yeah.
But I don't think they, you know, it doesn't really fit them one way or the other, because it's kind of like the young ones, they don't know anything different, because it's kind of like, you know, that's okay, Daddy's in the studio again. And, you know, my oldest daughter is kind of like, you know, do I get to meet, you know, this one, do I get to meet that one? And so they're just
okay. Kids,
you know.
Yeah.
I think they like me doing music better than they do me doing the marketing, because I'm a different human being when I'm working on music and writing lyrics. So I think they like Daddy a little bit more when he's, you know, in a different place spiritually, rather than dealing with clients who are a pain in the butt, you know.
Right. It's so funny because, you know, my children are all adults. My kids will tell me, Mom, can you, like, just stop being Lady Flava for a minute? Can you just be Mom? Or can you be Susan? You know, whatever. And I'm like, you know what? Just go on. Go do your thing. This is my thing. I'm 51 years old right now. I can do my thing. But I think it's funny just, you know, hearing, you know, how the family feels. Or even, you know, especially like kids. You know, what does it feel like? You know, what is your thought process when it comes to, you know, when your parent is it a creative soul and they're out there and they're doing this, whether it's studio or on the stage or, you know, being interviewed or whatever, you know, it's like, you know, how does that feel, you know, for the children? So that's cool. That's very cool. Okay, so I have to say this, you know, I had to go over to All About Jazz last night, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to download my copy of Pimp Strut.
Oh, those, yeah, the instrumental jazz track that we did, yeah.
Yeah, so is it okay if I play that?
Sure, you can certainly play it. It'll be on the record, and that song features Ted Belladin on saxophone, who also plays keyboards in my group as well. And, you know, that's kind of a sample of a certain style that we have when we play instrumental music. You know, I wanted to kind of, I really not feeling the smooth jazz. And Arizona was a lot about smooth jazz, and so I was like, you know what? If I was going to do a smooth jazz track, this is what I would want to do, and that's what Pimp Strut is.
Okay, here we go with Pimp Strut. That was Pinstruck by Mother's Favorite Child, Paris Tune. That's like funky piece. I was going to say something just like totally stupid and off the cuff. You know, when I saw the title track, you know, we don't talk about pimps too much anymore up here in Seattle, but
no.
Back in the day when I was coming up, let me tell you, there was a man who actually drove in Seattle, Washington, a purple velvet deuce and a quarter.
Wow.
He'd had his purple brim and his purple long coat, and I was like, okay. Yeah, okay. My visual of a pimp in Seattle, right?
Yeah, I don't see pimps much either, and I think that they, you know, the majority of them, if they are in the city, they dress a little bit differently now, but there's still some old school pimps out there. But you know, the title came because just the vibe on it. I was kind of like, you know,
right.
It was just, you know, thinking about the swagger of the track, and I just said, I would just call it Pimpstruck because I wasn't going to do any schools or anything to it. So
I love
that's
the title. So how do you come up with the titles to your tracks? Like, do you come up with the title first, or does it come after the birth of the music, or how do you go about that process? Because you've got some really interesting titles.
It's all different. One of the things, you know, I always try to come up with titles that are a little bit unique. You know, since I was a, you know, teenager, you know, I try not to make the title, you know, what is in the chorus unless the hook is that strong.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just, you know, I rant when I write. I only sleep about 2 hours a night, so I'm writing all
mm-hmm.
the time. And if something
okay.
comes up, then I say, ooh, I like that line. I like this, and this might be kind of a cool title. So I always try to make my titles a little bit more unique than the average, you know, title. And if you Google mm-hmm. songs, there's like 50,000 songs with the same title. So,
sure.
you know, I always try to do something so that I'm not, you know, 49,999 on the list. So
right.
I try to be creative.
Right. So would you like to talk about Sweet Tooth for Chocolate?
Oh, boy. Actually, you know what? Next week I'm going to get you the remix to that. We did a P-Funk remix, P-Funk influenced remix.
Ah,
this week, just
set
it up. It's like the party mix, and then we have another mix called the Dirty Mix. But yeah, I will certainly talk about Sweet Tooth without a problem. That one's got me in a little bit of a discussion lately. But yeah, we can talk about Sweet Tooth for sure. My mom's Italian, as black. So
okay.
Growing up, you know, in a biracial family, you get to see a lot of things that a lot of people don't see. And so, you know, my dad became a successful businessman moving out to the suburbs from the city when we moved. It was kind of like culture shock for me, you know, going from the city to the suburbs. And just everybody's life, the way they talked, the way they walked, just they dressed, everything was different. And so being a black man, you know, we... And when I was younger, I won't say now, when I was younger
right.
and we were, you know, in the suburbs, there was a certain swag that we had for girls that liked chocolate. I had a sweet tooth for chocolate. And
okay.
I was in a relationship, you know, a little while back, and this girl that I was with seemed to have an addiction to African-American men at the time.
Okay.
And she couldn't be, you know, faithful. She just couldn't get her stuff in order. And that's kind of
mm-hmm.
the idea of Sweet Tooth for Chocolate. The reality is she had told this man that she couldn't be with him anymore. And that man sent a text saying, well, if you ever want some chocolate, give me a call. And I thought both interactions were absolutely ignorant. And
wow.
that's kind of how I came up with the title for Sweet Tooth for Chocolate. He had said chocolate. And I was just trying to be creative and say, you know, girl, you got a sweet tooth. And a lot of people thought I was talking about drugs. And a lot
right.
of people thought I was actually talking about a person that had an addict to, and it was really, truly about a person at the time that had an addict to an ignorant stereotype.
Right. Okay.
And and so that's kind of what the song is about. You know, you're in love with somebody that is not, you know, being faithful and not being honest, and then
mm-hmm.
is ignorant concerning a stereotype. And, you know, like I said, being biracial, you know, that was an issue for me because I had, you know, I had to deal with so much ignorance against my mom, you know, so much ignorance against my dad, you know,
mm-hmm.
about, you know, the certain stereotypes of black men and white women. And so I just felt like I had to write this song. And that came out with Sweet Tooth, the chocolate.
Interesting story. I'm glad I asked you. That's an interesting story because it's totally going in a direction I wouldn't have guessed that it would go in. I totally understand about the biracial thing and all. I'm Japanese and German. My father's Japanese, my mother's German, but I was raised in a black community from birth.
Right.
You know, but my parents, my mother's from Brooklyn, and so that was another reason why, you know, Brooklyn Baby made me smile. Mama was born on Hancock Street in Brooklyn.
Yep.
But, you know, so my parents, when they got together, you know, it wasn't accepted for, you know, a white woman and an Asian man, you know, to be together, you know, and they were shunned so much, you know. And then when children came along, you know, my German grandma out in New York, she didn't claim us
mm-hmm.
as children because of our father being Japanese, you know. So there's just a challenge, too, then to also be raised in a black community, not being black, you know. Another challenge, you know, being added on to that. So interesting story. I'm loving. So I hope you're okay that I play Sweet Tooth for Chocolate.
Sure, you can play that.
All right. So I'm going to play Sweet Tooth for Chocolate by Paris Toon and Mother's Favorite Child.
Baby, you got it bad. Baby, you got it bad.
Chocolate. You know, it's funny, Paris, you know, when I have features on the show and they, you know, explain their thoughts, you know, behind creating the pieces. It definitely takes it in a different direction than maybe how we might experience it as a listener, as a fan, you know. And I think it's interesting, you know, it in a sense brings us into, you know, who Paris Toon is and what you're creating and how you go about creating. You know, one of the things I share on my shows a lot is, you know, how we experience the art may be so different than how you went about the process of creating it. But I think that's what the beauty of art is it's all in the interpretation of the experience.
And, you know, one of the things is, you know, like people read a book and they go and they move, like the book better because they have their own imagination on things. And,
right.
you know, for years I refused to do interviews. I mean, this is, you know, I've been producing records, you know, since the early 90s, you know, when I was young. And I refused to do interviews because, to me, production was behind the scenes. Nobody needed to talk to the producer or the lyricist. They just let them talk to the artist. And, you know, it was more so because I was on that Prince vibe, just trying to, I don't want to talk to the press or talk to anybody. I want to be mysterious and blah, blah, blah.
Okay,
and now
okay.
it's kind of like, you know, it's real life stuff that happened to me. I hope that I'm not ruining, you know, whatever other people of the song, they think of the song.
Mm-hmm.
But this
mm-hmm.
is this is my truth, you know what I mean? And people can take the songs however they want to take it and let it do for them. But, you know, like I said, whatever you hear from Paris Toon or Mother's Favorite Child, I actually went through it. It is real.
Right. But I think that, you know, it's allowing us to connect with you. I think it's almost going along that line, you know, Paris, when you talked about, you know, taking a fan and turning them into a friend. Even in an experience in a feature interview like this, and just hearing a little bit more depth about, you know, the what you're creating, why you created it, and what each, you know, song that's played, you know, meant to you, it's allowing us to connect with you. Even if we never, you know, connect with you on Facebook or we never meet you in person, there's a connect in hearing it. And I've heard it time and time again from people who listen to my shows that they're like, you know, Flav, we came by and we listened to that feature on the leopard carpet, you know, and hearing their story made us want to go find out more about them, you know, or go purchase their music. So it's an interesting thing, you know, but I think it's a beautiful thing to just, you know, have somebody such as yourself, you know, just be willing to share. And,
thank
you know,
I appreciate
and I appreciate you in doing that. So Paris, did you know that you always wanted to create from like a young child? You started out young writing. I mean, how did this really all get started to become who you are now?
Well, girls. That simple and shallow.
Okay.
I had liked I liked this girl, and I had no idea. I was very shy, so I didn't want to approach a girl. And you have to understand, you know, people say there's no way Paris was shy, you know what I mean? And people don't realize that, you know, when I was growing up, when you have a white mom and you're growing up in an
uh-huh.
Italian and Irish neighborhood and the one that looks totally different than everybody, you're not that popular kid. You're the kid that stands out, that people kind of look at strange. And so
yeah.
I had to kind of create something within myself to get through some of that, you know, not being one of the crew or not being, you know, a part of the gang or whatever it was. And so when I liked, you know, someone, I write it down because I didn't have the courage to for the approach. I you know, the approach was an issue for me. But writing it down and then being able to hand it to the person, what I felt, it worked. And it worked in ways to where my boys started asking me to write, you know, poetry to girls that they liked so that they could hand them, you know, poetry. And that was the beginning
okay.
of, wow, I could be honest on paper, and
okay.
if the person likes what I have to say, I may get the reaction that I'm looking for.
Okay.
That was the beginning of me writing.
Okay.
The music was a friend of mine had a record deal, and I had purchased a drum machine and a keyboard, and I was trying to make ballads with my poetry, you know. And he
okay.
asked me to do a song off his record. So I did three songs, and I learned how to loop and, you know, I got into hip-hop a little bit. And then when he submitted the album, he had all these producers, and they liked my three songs the best, so they asked me to produce the whole record. And that was the beginning of my music career.
Oh, wow.
And so
okay.
that's how I got into music. I got into it because my boy had a record deal, and Okay. You know, we were hanging out every single day, and so he just asked me, you know, I think he was just being because I bought some new equipment. He's like, man, go ahead and try it. We'll submit it, see what happens.
Okay.
And that was the beginning of me getting in the music industry. And then wow. the boy bands with New Kids and Bobby Brown and all that being from Boston, that kind of excited me a little bit.
So then obviously you just had a gift, a natural gift then, not even necessarily realizing it, but others in the industry recognize it.
You know, I don't know if it was I don't know if it was a gift. I think it may have turned into a gift with
okay.
you know, hard work, being honest. Because
uh-huh.
I'm sure I look back at some of those things that I wrote, I would probably want to kill myself of embarrassment. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So
okay.
you know, there are girls that hit me up on Facebook and are like, they kept my you from high school or junior high, and I'm like, oh my God, burn them. But so, I mean, you know, the pens, the red and blue and the green and deep. Just, I
right.
can just imagine highlights and I can just imagine the idiot stuff that I was saying. But that was the beginning of me being able to express, you know, my emotions and my feelings, and then, you know, being able to turn that into lyrics and into music. I mean, I have thousands and thousands of pages of lyrics and songs and things like that. So it always, I tell people all the time, you talk to any artist, somewhere the story starts with the panties. Somehow, somewhere, seems to always start with the panties, even if you don't even know what panties are. You know what I mean?
Right.
When you're that, it always seems to start there, and that's how it started with me.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. That is so funny. And you're not the only one who has shared stories like that. It's interesting to me. How come I never came across a boy who wanted to write me a poem? It's like, dang, I think I kind of missed out. I've heard this story over the years, you know, even in like when I had my actual coffee shop, Flavor Coffee House. Like, you know, I heard stories like that in the coffee
mm-hmm.
shop. I'm like, I never
right.
experienced it. But how funny is that? That's
yeah,
really,
that was,
that's
that
a
was,
great
that was it for me. Yeah, you know.
And here you are today. Now, I read somewhere that you either are working on or have or whatever, writing or have written a poetry book.
I wasn't writing a poetry book because happened, but I had met Jessica Care Moore in Brooklyn when she had first got off the plane in Detroit. That was the first person she met. She's a poet. And we got together, and I didn't know what a poet was. I was writing, I called them love letters. She calls it poetry.
Okay.
So
okay.
Since high school, you know, I was writing. And as I started writing to her and writing and showing her my lyrics or my journals, she kept telling me I was a poet. And, you know, she wanted to release a book on a publishing company, and she wanted to put things together. And I felt as though I'm a poet. I'm a producer, songwriter. I don't know anything about poetry. I don't speak poetry. So anyway, make a long story short, that I work with Mother's Favorite Child over the years kept saying, you know, you have a lot of great stories or lyrics that aren't going to be songs. Why don't you actually put out a book? And so what I basically said was, I'm not going to do it, but if you guys want to go through my journals and create an actual poetry book and, you know, put some of these poems into music, it can be like your thing. And that's kind of how it came about. So I think it'll probably be 2012, early 2013. There'll be a book of my, you know, thoughts and rants, and then there'll be a CD that I'm going to call my back album. It's stuff
okay.
that I could not release in the industry, but it will be some, you know, sexual things, you know, hurtful things, love things, you know, dark things that I could never release or would never release, you know, for radio or you know, to play out live, but, you know, for people who,
okay.
you know, like, poets are kind of, like, forgiving, like, they'll listen to anything, you know, and so you can say what you want to say, and they won't judge you for it. So I said, yeah, that's fine, go ahead, you know, and so that's kind of how it's going to be.
Okay,
so it will be edited by Mother's Favorite Child, you know, the
okay.
vocalist. They're going to edit the book and put it all together, and there's
okay.
some painters who are going to, you know, put it together.
Okay. I'm
yeah.
gonna have to. I'm gonna have to tell poets, you know, that this is how they are. You know, they're forgiving and they're like accepting and all of that. So, do you have a title for that, or is Mother's Favorite Child coming up with a title, or?
No, I could have a title for the. It's called A Life Untitled.
Okay.
And so that's what the actual title is going to be. I was going to actually name it Don't Make the Town Tramp, You're Steady. But they thought that's a little bit So it's actually going to be called A Life Untitled.
Okay. That's great. You know what? I want to jump into this track because I just like the way you spelled Jesus. So I want to play You Need Jesus.
Okay.
All right. Come on now. There we go.
You did me dirty up into strippers wrestling in the mud.
How many times do you want to go up to somebody and say, you know what, you need Jesus? You know, like.
Yeah. Well, that person for sure needed Jesus.
Yeah. I know you got a personal story. I was just thinking about this. You know, I'm a part of, like, different groups or whatever when it comes in, you know, to be a part of this industry of artists and you know, the different groups, whether it's a Flava News group or a FJF music group or whatever, there's kind of like this understanding that all the members are part of, you know, this collab, whatever it looks like, helps get out there, promote, market, whatever it is, whether you've got an online presence, whether you're out there and about, you know, amongst others. You know, out there in person or whatever, you kind of help spread the word. Now, when it comes to mother's favorite child, is there that type of understanding? Do you have an outside team or inside team or street team that helps you spread the word about who you are and what you're doing?
Well, I don't have a street team per se. Most of it is the fans, the people that we've met online, basically hearing our music. Recently, we have Hassan Brown. Is now our publicist, which just started in January. So he's been actually doing some for us now. So we actually do have a publicist. And I highly recommend for any group, you know, or artist, you know, to somehow find a way to come up with some funds or save up and get some kind of publicity for yourself. Because without it, you know, without the marketing and the publicity, it's basically, you know, a death sentence. Unless you go, you know, viral on the internet. Other than that, it's pretty much, you know, very difficult to become, you know, successful without marketing and a publicist or a street team. You know, so whichever way you can do it. But I'd say, you know, really, it's just been a matter of buzz, just based on, you know, luckily, just based on, you know, the music and the lyrics and that's gotten us to where we are now, and you know, hopefully Hassan will take us the next level, and then you know, we'll talk to more people, and you know, hopefully more people will enjoy the music and the songs that we're writing.
Definitely. Well, you know, I can see why you say that. In being able to have the ability to hire an outside source that can do the work, because one of the things that we do talk about here at Flavor News Radio is it's so time consuming. So time-consuming to be online and the different, you know, social networks or getting out there and trying to figure out who and where, you know, people are going to pay attention to you the most. It's almost like having a full-time job, you know, doing this online thing. Well, as you being artists and creative souls, you know, and family, you know, having four children and all of that, it's not like you necessarily have the time to just sit here online and figure out who to go and post a video or your music or invite to your website or this, that, and the other. So I definitely can see the value, you know, in an outside source or you know, everybody having an understanding that, you know, at least one day a week they're going to get out there on their little networks or whatever and push it out or whatever that looks like. You know, I will say as far as, like, you know, my connection with Hassan Brown, you know, I've learned a lot from him, you know, and he's got a pretty good hustle out there, you know, and creative, you know, not necessarily that main way that people might think about getting somebody out there. So I've definitely come to have a great appreciation and respect, you know, for who he is and what he does through Puzzle Marketing and Media. So I think that's something, you know, that's going to help, you know, work for you. And, you know, definitely here at Flavor News Radio Paris, you know, please know, you know, I will support you in any way that I can, you know, from playing your music, when you have shows, if you've got flyers, you know, you want me to get on the side and push out to my networks, you want to come back on the show and just, you know, give a pub about something that you're doing, you're welcome to do that, whatever it is, you know, we're here to support, you know, who you guys are and what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much, and, you know, when you do pick a marketing team, or, you know, a publicist, you know, I drilled Hassan, you know what I mean? And you have to do that, because you've got to make sure that the people that you hire or the people that you're working with have a full understanding as to who you are an artist and as a person. Because a lot of the time, you know, publicists and management, they try to turn you into what they believe is going to work, as opposed to being creative and working for you to make who you are and what you are work. And, you know, luckily when Hassan heard my music and we got to talking, and he knows, you know, how I am about business and branding and, you know, how real I am about the truth and honesty, he knew that there was no other way to release Mother's Favorite Child but with pure honesty. And here it is. You either love it or you don't. And, you know, luckily he's finding the right demographics for us, that people are enjoying what it is doing.
Well, you know, you made a good point. I'm glad that you brought that up, because I think no matter what, I think that's one of the hard things in this industry is finding the right fit. you know, whether it's, you know, I've heard it time and time again when it comes to bands, how different, you know, artists drop off out of bands, more so not because of the lack of talent, but more so personality clashes.
Correct.
You know,
yeah.
And, you know, and I think that too. I agree with you. When it comes to somebody who's going to represent you as a publicist, as a promoter, as a manager, whatever it is, they have to be on board with what your vision is. And I think that too many times people are like, I need a manager. Okay, well, what does that really mean? What does that
right.
really mean? You know, you need a manager or you need a publicist. What does that mean? And I think in a meeting that I had yesterday with, you know, somebody that I'm working with on the business level of what I'm doing, you know, he was like, how many artists actually have a business plan?
Right.
You know, and so it's from time to time I put that out there, you know, when I hear these little tidbits, right, that make me think like, ching-ching, you know, like a light bulb goes off in my own head. I'm like, okay, how many artists really look at the fact that they are a business? They are the product. They are creating the product. You know, so you have to have a plan in place to be able to effectively implement and get yourself out there. And what are the tools that you're going to need, you know, to get out there beyond, you know, your studio doors or your home or whatever it is, you know, where you create and all of that. And there's so many parents that I'm finding that don't get that part. They don't get the part that they're the business.
There are people that were part of Baptism by Fire CD, part of the Spirit Child CD, and even CDs from our past, that are no longer part of Mother's Favorite Child for whatever reasons, whether it's personal reasons or artistic reasons, you know, based on things to do different things.
Okay.
And it always amazed me how there are people that quit or switch up before the success is about to hit them in the face.
Mm.
And they realize that they've got to do something different. Or that, you know what I mean? Like all of a sudden now they're either being held back or whatever it might be. Or when things start to go well, they totally flip out and think that they're now Elvis or Michael Jackson. And sometimes having somebody that's part of the circle, not in the circle, is a really good thing for new artists. Because there's so much with emotion on your art, and a lot of times you can't separate the business from the art. You know, and you really do. I mean, I never did interviews. And as soon as I put my name on the front of the CD, it was over for me to be able to play that role. Like, I don't have to talk to anybody. It was done. Because, like, well, then you don't need to be an artist. And I was like, well, I'm not going to have the Mother's Favorite Child CD done for a year. Well, you need to put something out, and this is what you need to do. And so I did that. And that was very difficult for me personally, because this isn't what I'm used to. I didn't do this for the last 10 years. So,
right.
So now I understand, you know, if you want to step up your game, sometimes you kind of have to do the things that are a little bit uncomfortable if you want to go to that next level, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to go on a casting couch. All I had to do was answer some questions. So it wasn't that bad. So once you get out of your whole, you know, I am God ego mentality of I'm an artist and nobody can tell me what to do, well, okay, then you go work your regular job, and then you can be on the weekend. That's not going to be me. So there are people that basically ruin themselves based on not really being able or willing to really take that next step and understand that there is a responsibility on the business side to your art. And if you don't respect that, your art is going to sit and deposit with hundreds of CDs that you haven't sold yet. And that's the reality. That's not, you know, I'm not belittling anyone. I'm just saying it's reality.
Sure.
So there's people not, you know, they're part of Mother's Favorite Child right now, and they're not reaping any of the benefits right now that Mother's Favorite Child is getting, but they put a lot of time into it and then decided that they weren't ready for it or it just wasn't for them. And now they're not doing anything. You know, karaoke bars, all jazz clubs.
Sure.
And So sometimes, you know, you've got to just, you know, man up. You know, whether you're a man or a woman, just man up and say, I'm going to do it. You know, how bad do you want? And quite honestly, there's a lot of people that talk about it and they don't want it. See, I don't talk about the radio anymore. You know, I don't talk about well, oh, the radio's terrible, this and that. Oh, I can't stand it. All the artists are terrible. Why am I going to talk about it? You know what? Let me change it. Let me actually change it. Some music.
Right.
And if they won't play it on commercial radio, I will pull the fan base throughout the internet and overseas to where
right.
people like me who can't listen to regular radio will dial into internet radio and say,
sure.
this is the kind of music I want.
There you go.
And, you know, so that's all it is. Just have to work ethic. Just do it. You know?
Yeah, and I agree with you. The work ethic, the willingness to, you know, put in some time. You know, there's so many of us that can be online on the social networks. Well, how about going to Google, you know, and doing some research and finding out some information that would really, really be valuable, you know, to who you are in your career, you know, as this creative soul, I think is so very important. Is there a tool out there that you would recommend that just is a great resource for somebody coming into this game and actually wanting to be serious about, you know, getting involved as an independent or underground artist?
Sure, there's a few. I mean, of course, Facebook. Everybody knows about Facebook. I would say if an artist who is starting, they don't really have a budget, but they might have some music and some photos and a small bio, I'd say the first thing that they should do is to reverse.
Sure.
And the reason is, it has nothing to do with, you know, people say, I want to be on Reverb Nation because I don't want to ruin my brand. If you have a brand, you can brand yourself on Reverb Nation. But the thing is, you're going to get more visits. You have more staff to come into sites like Reverb Nation, you know, Bandcamp. You have, because there's charts and there's genres. And so I say any of those MP3 sites that you can utilize and create fan base from, and then connect with those other artists in the genres. To get them to listen to your music, to find out where they're playing and, you know, just basically connect with people. Start off on the free sites. As you start to create a fan base and maybe save up some money, you can then create strong brand and then create your own website. You know, having your own website without any of the marketing tools to get people to the website is ridiculous. So if you're an artist starting out, I would say, you know, people use GarageBand, they use Pro Tools, you know, whatever you're using to program your music. Create your tracks, put them into MP3s, upload them, create a baby account or, you know, get your digital distribution through Reverb Nation or whoever it is that you decide to go with, and start your hustle that way. You know, as you know, back in the 80s, hip-hop became entrepreneurship for black men. If we could do it out of a trunk selling cassette
right,
and become multimillionaires,
right.
we didn't have these tools that they have today. You know, the musicians from back in the day, you know, they say that about us. You know, if I had what you guys had now, I would be set for life. And it's the truth. So utilize what you have and realize there are people that did more with less. So stop your whining and just do it. That's pretty much it.
So what are your thoughts on production level? You know, do you think it's okay to put something out there that I would call subpar? You know, to represent yourself, or do you think that an artist should wait until they have that capability of getting somewhere or getting the right tools and understanding how to use those tools to give out the best production as possible?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, and you know, I don't know if it can be answered correctly. And the reason is that there is some hot production that I think should have never even came out. Just based on my opinion of production, you know, to call it subpar.
Sure.
I think because formats have changed, WAV files have become MP3s, compressed, people's ears have changed. So, you know, you hear tapes, and people like tapes, and, you know, people put things out there, and they, you know, they can become huge, like, you know, Drake. I personally am about brand and perception. I don't want to release anything with my name on it because I know that it's banging and it can play next to Maxwell or D'Angelo. Now, whether people believe that it can, you know, think that it's good enough to, you know, that doesn't matter to me. It's a matter of what I think. And so, you know, for me, if I don't think that it can, I'm not putting it out. Now, that's kind of like where I come from. But I also have professional musicians and I have my own recording studio. Somebody has got to hear something of yours. So if it's a matter of taking your demo to people like me, Let me rephrase that. If it's like taking a demo,
okay, you know, everybody's
the
only sending you a demo.
To say, can you help me make this, take this to another level? Then yes. I mean, I'm producing an artist named I Am Jones, and we just released his single called She, and
okay.
Really well. I mean, people are downloading it, and it's starting to get a buzz. It was just released a few days ago. He came to me with mixtape, but I liked what he had, and I saw him before live on stage, and that was enough for me to see what I could do with him.
Okay.
So as soon as that single was released, we took down every single mixtape thing that on the internet that we could find of his, because we wanted to recreate his brand.
Mm-hmm.
So I would rather see one hot track than six bogus tracks, because you didn't take the time or the finances to really
sure.
record one. Do one track
sure.
and then do the five bogus tracks, but don't play them, you know, live, playing for producers,
right.
engineers, and see if they can make it better
right.
for you. That's
okay.
my advice. You know, but sometimes
right.
people do get over with their sub-production.
Right. Right. And there, you know, when I first started the radio show like 2 years ago, you know, I was just happy to get music. I was so in love with creative souls, right? And it wasn't, my ears weren't listening necessarily to the production of it. Then there were the people that was like, Slave, are you listening to what you're playing? Because if you listen to this particular artist and then you listen to the next one, okay, you know what? The quality is so off from each other just within the artist that I was playing. To then, you know, get involved with some, you know, producing engineers and all of that kind of, I would say to them, what is it that you hear? So that I can kind of understand what it is that I'm hearing, you know, when I listen to tracks. And so over the years, you know, I've learned to listen to music differently. And for me now, it is kind of a big deal, you know, whether the production is good or not. But then, you know, I think he dropped off the line. So anyway, you know, the production for me is kind of important now compared to others. Yet I could recognize whether there is talent or not when it comes to an artist. So, you know, interesting. I have really enjoyed having this conversation with Paris Toon tonight. I hope that everybody listening to the show has. I don't know if he will be able to call back in. There's only 10 minutes left in the show, so it's really okay if he didn't. I do want to put it out there. You know, go check out Paris Toon and Mother's Favorite Child. Just go to Paris Toon, PARISTOON.com, and, you know, you can find out about Paris, the gentleman who's been on the show tonight, to the artist that he's working with, get a taste of his flavor, find out, you know, where they're going to be performing at, how you can support them, you know, follow them. I think they're a quality act, definitely worth paying attention to. And in my opinion, I think they've got something that's timeless. I really, really do. I think it's music that I personally would sit down and listen to, you know, in the future. It's music that I can share and not worry about, you know, being around, you know, my family, my grandchildren, all of that. You know, that's a big deal when it comes, you know, to art, you know, being able to not have to censor it so much when it comes to my grandchildren. So, you know, again, go check out Paris Toon over at paristoon.com. Just Google him, okay? So it will come up, you know. And if you go to Mother's Favorite Child, .com, it takes you to the exact same website. You know, pay attention. They're making some moves. Obviously, you know, he's put in the work and the dedication, and there's commitment and quality and all of that. You know, and it sounds like he's been very, very fortunate in what he's been able to put together for himself and the artist that he's working with, and has a great love and respect. Storytelling through the music, painful stories, to having a desire to create something of quality, totally respect that also. But I embrace the fact that, you know, art can allow us to feel. And, you know, and so that's what I definitely, for me, on my side as a fan and a listener of the music, that's what I definitely take away from Baptism by Fire. You know, again, go check it out. you know, get to know the, his flavor. If you love it, you know, support it by purchasing copies to then, you know, sharing it with your network and helping Mother's Favorite Child and Paris Tune get the word out. So you know what? Let's see. I will pick another piece that I can close out today's show with. And again, thank you to all that listen to the show live, to those that come back and check out the archives. This is what we do here at Flava News Radio. Great, great features have been coming my way, and I feel extremely, extremely blessed. So let's close out with a piece that's called The Difference. Paris talked about this earlier in the show, and this is The Difference by Paris Tune and Mother's Favorite Child.
Thank you.
All right, we were listening to The Difference by Paris Tune and Mother's Favorite Child. What an amazing night this was for me, Paris, and your line's back open. You know, I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule and spending this time with me. I appreciate your honesty. I learned some things. You know, I really value this because I love talking to people that make me think, you know, and kind of go in a different direction than maybe how I might have viewed something and open my eyes to a different way of seeing it. And I really value that. So I thank you, you know, for bringing that to Flavor News Radio. The music. In my opinion, it speaks for myself, my friend. You know, it's amazing. It's beautiful. It's sassy. You know, it's funky. You know, it tells stories. It makes you want to groove. It for me, being 51 years old, it takes me back to a time in life where music was good. You know, it meant something. It made me smile. It made me think, you know, okay, I was with Jonathan at this time when I heard that song. You know, that's how I kind of see this music that you have created along, you know, with your friends. So
thank you so much for the support.
Sure.
And I just want to, I never give shout outs. And so I you know, I couldn't have done this album, you know, without my crew, Dowell, Tanya, Morris, B, Alex, Ted, Marcos, Kent, Jason, and Colton. So, you know, I truly appreciate, you know, the support that you've given Mother's Favorite Child and myself, as well as, you know, Mother's Favorite Child and all the people we've been meeting along the way. I truly, truly mean that.
You are so welcome. It, you know, this journey is not going to end here, my friend. You've definitely, you know, gained a fan out of me. First, of course, it was the music that caught me, right? Now that I've had this experience to experience you, you know, and through you experience, you know, your friends, Mother's Favorite Child, you know, it takes it to a totally different level than, you know, what I felt yesterday. You know, so I'm definitely a fan. I'm up here in Seattle, Washington, waving my leopard pom-poms for all of you. You know, it's all about the leopard up here with Paris. So just, I want you to know, when you're down there in Arizona and traveling the world, when you see leopard print, just think of Lady Flav in Seattle, Washington.
I will do that. I will definitely do that.
But, you know, I'm here to support you and the group in any way that I can. Come this year, I'm also going to be doing shows on five other 24-hour internet radio stations I've been picked up. You know, so I will be able to take your sound to those other stations and put them in front of other listenerships besides Flavor News Radio. And, you know, definitely working closely with Hassan Brown, you know, on things. So you just holler. I'm here. You know,
congratulations on that.
I will play my part. Oh. But you know
what?
I'll
make sure that we get you the... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're going to give me the remix.
We're dropping some singles in the next few weeks. So I'll make sure that you get get an advance, you know, copies for your show. I'll be dropping about two or three singles in the next 3 weeks. But I should be able to get you something hopefully by mid next week for Sweet Tooth the Chocolate Remix.
Okay. And I'll just put this out there too, that anybody that you're supporting and producing, if you want me to play them, you know, please you know, go ahead and reach out to me. I will do that for you.
Well, thank you. I definitely will.
Definitely. And so anyway, dropped off the line, I did put out the website letting the listeners know that if they go to paristune.com, if they go to motherschild.com, it will take them to the same place. It's definitely a great place to go and, you know, learn more about who you guys are. One thing I have to say is the first time I went over to paristune.com, which is the same site, I forgot that I didn't, you know, click off of the site, right? I was sitting here just like grooving to y'all's music. You know, I was like grooving. I'm sitting here working and didn't even like realize like where this music was actually coming from. But it was coming off of your website, you know, and I was like, I was so digging that.
Oh, yes.
I have no idea how long I had your website open, you know.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's a widget coming from Reverb Nation, one of the sites that I was telling you about. And
right.
Yeah, that's you know, thank you for that. You know, we worked hard, and I think that you're gonna really appreciate the Mother Spirit Child album because I had more time to write and work on this, and this is gonna I'm hoping that this Mother's Favorite Child album truly surprises a lot of people, because I just heard D'Angelo's record and I was like, oh, I got to go back to the lab. I got some work to do after hearing that record. So,
really?
Oh, my God.
Uh-uh. Uh-uh.
D'Angelo is
really
back.
I get you on that part, my friend, but you know what? You guys are hot. You really are.
No, I really am. I mean, but I love, I mean, I'm from hip hop, so like when Rakim dropped the record, I'm sure Big Daddy Kane was like, oh man, I got to go out and you know, and that's what it was, that inspiration, that friendly competition. And you know, when I hear a D'Angelo record, I get excited because I'm a fan of D'Angelo, you know, so.
Sure.
When
sure,
I hear a D'Angelo
sure.
record, I get angry because I'm like, why didn't I come up with this track? Or you know what I mean? And that inspires me to then,
okay.
you know, do something. So, you know,
all
but
right.
this Mother's Favorite Child record, when you hear it, I'm telling you,
I
really think you're going to be like, because, you know, this Baptism by Fire is junior high school compared to what we're coming out with Mother's Favorite Child. This is like,
okay.
I'm putting my stamp on this next record. This is the real deal.
Your big toes in this one coming up, huh?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to it. I got this. You know what? I'm so excited about all this that's going on for me and connecting with Hassan and the artists he's bringing my way. I'm sitting over here with a Kool-Aid grin on my face. Paris, I'm just so excited. I am so grateful to have, you know, connected with you and experienced, you know, your music, to be able to share it with my listeners, to hear your story, and to just embark on this journey with you. I mean, I'm serious. I that's how I feel. I feel like I'm embarking on this journey, you know?
Thank you again. And we will definitely hit Seattle. We have too many people that are down, you know, that we're working with that are from Seattle. So we're going to find a way to get, you know, to Seattle. And I've got some friends in Seattle. So, you know, I've got to bring the crew to Seattle, you know,
well,
so we'll get
there. And definitely stay in touch with me. You know, doors are opening up for me also. You know, to do some tours and work with bringing artists to the Pacific Northwest. So say, you know, stay up with me also in regards
to that.
I may be able to be instrumental in doing that with you guys, definitely. So thank you so much again, Paris, for, you know, taking 2 hours of your night out to spend with me. You know, hug them babies for me. I'm proud to know you. I know they're proud of you also. And, you know, just keep doing what you're doing, my friend, because this is definitely needed. And appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to talking again, you know, in the future when we drop the next record.
Definitely. I'm here. You know how to find me. So I'm going to go ahead and close out tonight's show then with For You, I Will.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, darling. Take care. Good night.
You too. Good night.
All right. Guest, Paris Toon, Mother's Favorite Child, what an amazing experience on the leopard carpet tonight. Definitely go over there and check them out over at ParisToon.com or MothersFavoriteChild.com. Google them. Go over to YouTube. Watch YouTubes. You know, these are artists, talents, flavor that you really need to pay attention to. These are experiences that you will take with you into the future, I trust and believe. So take care. God bless. And thank you so much for supporting what we do here on Flavor News, Flavor News Radio, and on the Leopard Carpet. Good night.